So I will just start by clarifying what I mean by seagull, because I took that from a quote, and during this paper I will be using the word seagull interchangeably with herring gull, and sometimes it might also be including, without me saying, greater and lesser blackback gulls, but you know what I mean. I mean a seagull, everyone can recognise that sort of seaside bird, but you know, just so we don't have that hanging over our heads as a problem for a start and beginning. It's not biologically accurate, but it's okay because it's a word and we all understand what the word means. I'm no linguistic expert, but hopefully it does make sense in that way. So I work for the RSPCA, and for me this paper was really inspired by the work that we do in wildlife rehabilitation, looking after thousands of injured seagulls, herring gulls particularly, each year. And the centre I work at, last year we admitted 983 gulls, and of those many were orphans, but many others were victims of specific acts of cruelty. They'd been shot, or they had been stoned, or they had been poisoned, or they had been kicked. And it's always been a fascination for me as to why there was such a negative attitude towards these, what I would consider to be majestic seabirds. And so I was wanting to explore a little bit more about that, because the other important piece of work that we do, apart from patching these birds up and hopefully putting them back to the wild, is trying to prevent cruelty happening in the first place, which, when you think about that as an act in itself, goes back to educating people, trying to, I guess, breed more positive attitudes and understandings of animals so that these kind of actions are not encouraged to take place. And in looking at why people do these things, why do they hate seagulls so much? There obviously are some obvious and major reasons why that might be. One of which is the noise, particularly at this time of year when they're nesting and they're on people's roofs and making a lot of noise, people hate the noise. Another reason is the fact that they fly over your head and poo directly on you, on purpose, and with a very good aim. And so that's another reason why people don't like them. But actually, one of the really big reasons that people don't like them or profess to finding them menacing and scary and so on is the fact that they seize our food, that they take our food from us, that they steal stuff from us, that they eat the things that we want to eat. And that engenders a lot of passion in people and, you know, a lot of, I guess, confrontational behaviours between people and gulls. And so I'll just start with this, which is taken from the Daily Mail, which is my Bible. It's the source of all things positive and negative about animals, because they love lions and big cats, but they're less keen on gulls, although actually this story is not a bad one, I have to say. This is Mrs. Dack here. And she was conveniently walking in Brighton on the seafront with her husband in tow with a camera. I get the feeling maybe it was set up, but I was really just suggesting perhaps that. So the unsuspecting Mrs. Dack was completely taken by surprise while she enjoyed the sunshine with her husband. She did let out a screech as this thing swooped down, and if there's one thing Mrs. Dack doesn't like, it's having her donut pinched. I think we can all empathise with that. And it's not just when gulls take them, hasten to add. But it struck me that it's something about food. Now, this is a story of an animal having a meal. Why is this even in a newspaper? Animal eats food. Well, all animals pretty much eat food if they want to survive. It seems to be very strange that we should get so excited about animals looking for food, but there you are. It does cause all sorts of different problems. Now, you may well be aware that gulls feed in a range of different ways. They scavenge, they hunt, but they're also what's called kleptoparasites, and so they do steal food off of other animals, other birds, larger and smaller, and clearly off of people as well. And there's research that suggests that this is, particularly with stealing food off of people, it's a learned behaviour. They might learn it from another gull who's doing it. But actually there's also been some research recently that suggests that if you go to a seaside town, like say for example St Ives, which is where the Daily Telegraph did some research recently, actually there's only a couple of gulls that do the stealing off of people. Most of them don't. And so to blame all gulls, I think, is grossly unfair, but that's of course what we do. You know, they're shite hawks, they're horrible things that fly around in the air, and they nick all of our good stuff. But it is a good thing that they do. That is how they survive. And we like this energy-rich, calorific, fatty, sugary food, so it makes sense that it would appeal to gulls as well, because it's a very, efficient way of getting enough food to survive. But, of course, what happens when they do take our food, we get very cross about it, and there's often quite a lot of backlash. But the research, again, about gulls taking our food suggests that this is an issue of brains, not an issue of brawn. So we're not talking about big bullies here, although actually in this picture the gull does look pretty big. Poor little Mrs. Duck here. But the reason that they're so successful at it, the ones that are really successful at it, it's suggested that it is to do with their intelligence rather than to do with their physical properties, abilities and size, although those are important. They've got to have good aim and catch and that kind of thing. I don't have any videos, but I will just add as an aside here that if you Google gull and donut on YouTube, put it into YouTube, put it into Google, there are lots of gull stealing donut videos. Enjoy at your leisure later on, which I would encourage you to have a look at. I mean, most of them are set up, but they're still quite entertaining. So, you know, this is what is going on, but I still am slightly mystified as to why it should be such a big deal. You know, if my pet dog takes a sandwich off of my plate, I don't write to the papers about it. And, you know, his photo has never been in the papers for stealing food. So it's strange. Now, the question that this raises then is, you know, is it war between people and gulls when it comes to taking food? These pictures here are all taken from what are called food snatches in Helgoland, and illustrate the different and talented ways in which gulls can acquire food. But the words here are also taken from newspaper coverage and from interviews that I did to find out about the language people use when they're describing what happened. And you'll see why the kind of words people use are saying, I was mugged, I was intimidated, I was attacked, I was deformed, I was terrorised. It is war, really, isn't it? We're seeing a lot of kind of hardcore language here. And in fact, the Daily Telegraph went on an expedition to St Ives to find out what flavour ice creams gulls like best. They described themselves as, you know, bravely going to the front lines and other such evocative ways of describing how, you know, scary and dangerous it would be to face off with some seagulls down in the southwest. But, you know, we can see that the gulls here, well, they're taking ice creams, but they're also known for taking sandwiches, taking chips, as I said, all the things that we particularly like, and all the things that we cherish eating ourselves. And just in case you're interested, the Daily Telegraph tells us that strawberry is the number one flavour, followed by vanilla, chocolate less popular. So now we've got that out of the way. But I've mentioned this makes sense because these are, you know, calorific foods. So, you know, it is a good thing for the gulls that they can develop this talent to do this. But you know, apart from being ambushed in these sorts of ways, of course, some people actually encourage gulls. And so this is where the tension ramps up a little bit, because a lot of people, apparently 95% of people in Britain, hate gulls. But there's the 5%. I'm not sure that they're dedicated gull lovers, but they certainly aren't the haters, according to the papers. So these may be the feeders, and I'll talk a little bit more about the feeders later on. But when gulls get a taste for our food, this is what we see. You know, we don't just see it as a war against us or a war between us and them. We describe them as masters of intimidation, winged raiders. They're cunning and conniving, greedy, pesky, voracious, aggressive, and intelligent. And those words weren't used about Nick Clegg. They're used about the gulls. But this article was from October last year, so before the Lib Dems fell out of power, and Clegg, I guess at that time, wasn't very popular. So it's quite something that seagulls can make him look good. So it just goes to show the depth of our sort of hatred and loathing of these poor birds that really are just trying to, you know, scrape by and get a meal. But of course, they don't always eat proper food items as we would see them. And this causes even more problems for the gulls. There's a couple of stories here. This one was in Bexhill. I think it was a couple of years ago now. Stop Teeth. He didn't eat the dentures, actually left them on a roof nearby, and the maintenance man had to go get a ladder and get the teeth back down, and they were washed off and given back to Mrs. the Bear. I'm not sure she put them back in her mouth, but let's assume she did. And the story of the Chihuahua was only very recently, the 6th of May, apparently this little puppy got seized and munched by a gull. So, you know, it's bad enough when they take our ice creams, but then they come over here, take our Chihuahuas as well. It really is, you know, beyond all reason now. So this is, I think, when the popularity really plummets. The gulls are antagonising us when they take food we like, but it's much worse when they take inappropriate things and damage our property and steal our stuff. And so what happens next? we want to kill them all. So they started it by coming here and pinching all our stuff, but we've got to finish it off by annihilating them. And these are the kind of debates that we get, certainly in Hastings every year. Should we cull the gulls? But it's not just in the southwest. I found this nice little one for Kirkcaldy here, Seagull Menace. You know, every year, around about this time of year and for the next 6 weeks during the nesting season, it's the plague that descends upon the seaside towns, that the gulls are seen very much as our enemies and something that we should get rid of. They're uncontrollable, they fly down from the sky, they're in a sort of a spatial category different from us, and so we find it hard to defend ourselves against this aerial onslaught. You can see it makes quite a story. And it doesn't just make stories in the media. All of this nicely plays out, not only in people's home lives, but also in children's literature. And I guess it doesn't come across brilliantly, my screenshot here, but what the girls are saying is, this is excellent, Peach Melba Greg, I think. And he's a scrumptious lunch, Tom. So perhaps girls do have good taste after all, alongside the chihuahuas. So girls are depicted, you know, across the board really in this way of, you know, they're all about thieving the food. This book was actually written in 1977, so it's not a modern phenomenon, but it is perhaps relatively recent that it's been able to spread across social media quite so vigorously. And if you look on Facebook, you'll see endless pages dedicated to hating and destroying and killing gulls, with a lot of abusive language going on there about how hideous they are. One of my interviewees, I was trying to work out what's wrong with gulls, and if they ate one of your chips, is it that they're making them dirty? Are they contaminating them? What is the problem? Why can't we share? Why can't we all get along? And he said, well, if a girl ate my chips, I wouldn't finish them. I'd feed them all the rest. I'm playing the long game, giving girls diabetes, was his concept. So, you know, he wasn't going to feed them bicarbonate of soda and blow them up like everybody else is, but he was going to give them diabetes. So it was seen as a strategic battle, rather than an instant win. And you can read for yourself the quote at the bottom. The problem with gulls is they're sort of contaminated, they're dirty, that's why we don't want them nibbling on our ice creams. Having said that though, equally we don't really want our pet animals nibbling on our ice cream. For the same people that were telling me that gulls were dirty, and so if they, you know, stuck their beak in my ice cream, I wouldn't eat it. They weren't letting their dogs do it either. So it seemed odd to me that the dog could kind of get away with it and get the rest of the ice cream given to it. But the gull, you know, was very much treated in a different way when it came down and took the ice cream without permission. So different animals very much getting treated in different ways there. But is there any redemption for the gulls? This was something from reasonably recently in the papers, so it's 2015. Chicken PM David Cameron admits, I was bullied by seagulls. I'm not sure those were his exact words. I think that's a paraphrasing of what he said, which was something about how he stole some ham out of his sandwich once, which is a very common theme with gull stories. Once, people are often not very specific about when these things happened, but they did, and it was awful, and they've been traumatised ever since. And Cameron is no different. And he apparently is backing a sort of review into Britain's Seagull Menace to look at ways in which we can rectify this problem and stop the issue of gulls taking our food and, you know, harassing us and being annoying and so on. So, you know, some good may come out of this. But the other thing that this starts to suggest to me is, well, as an animal welfare organisation, we're trying to turn around attitudes to gulls, but all the press is bad press. All the stories are bad stories. Everything about gulls is unpleasant and negative. But when politics starts to come into it, we have an opportunity to turn it around. Because the issue with David Cameron is, I know loads of people must have voted for him. Probably many people in here voted for David Cameron. But when you get figures that are so loved or hated in the limelight, sometimes this can be beneficial to the animals that are caught up in the whole story. So when Cameron speaks out against gulls, perhaps there's an opportunity for the people who perhaps are less keen on Cameron to think, well, I know what then, let's encourage the gulls. That'll tick him off. So I'm thinking perhaps there's a window of opportunity for the gulls here to come into power in the next government, you know, because they might be able to overthrow him, who knows. But, you know, apart from all this bad press, of course, there are a lot of people that love gulls. There are the people that feed them. And certainly in my research, I came across some people who, you know, really enjoyed that as part of their daily routine. And this was often the case, that they had built up a relationship with a gull or a pair of gulls, we're assuming it really is the same gull every day anyway, that would perhaps come to their window or come to their house and they would feed that gull. And their reasoning behind that was either, well, it makes sure that no others come here. If I feed this one, it sort of defends me against the rest. Or, you know, they would have a long and enduring relationship with this gull. And, you know, gulls living up to about 20 years potentially, you can imagine that this is a possible thing. And these people who kind of celebrate sharing their food with gulls are the people I wanted to understand a little bit more in my quest to think about what are the ways which we can improve things for gulls and stop them being the target of all these different acts of cruelty. And, you know, these are the people who've got sort of narratives of connection rather than these narratives of separation and divergence. And so I was trying to get a little bit of a flavour of what that might be. And so my conclusions, really, are numerous and vague. So I shall enchant you with them right now. And they're listed here. Now, these people here, I don't know if they're male or female, because they're gulls. We can't tell until we do a post-mortem. These people are on Facebook, and they have a Facebook page called something like Dressing Up as Seagulls and Walking Around Town Stealing People's Chips. And so I believe that's what they do. And so people like this, I think, can have the potential to help encourage us to enjoy our relationship with gulls, because this is about making it personal, making it engaging, maybe bringing a little bit of humour in as well. And then this little bit here, which again will be a bit small for you to see here, this is another Facebook page called Seagulls of Brighton, and you might be familiar with Humans of New York Facebook pages, which sort of post things about inspiring people and thoughts from people in New York. Seagulls of Brighton is the same sort of thing, but it's about seagulls. And this is a little story about a pair of gulls that met and their romance over wasted food and that sort of thing. And it's very sweet. And Seagulls of Brighton posts these kind of thought-provoking little things. I assume it's meant to encourage people to like gulls, because that's what it did to me. It warmed my heart to read all these romantic things about gulls meeting up over a box of chips and so on. So my sort of idea of how we might turn things around for gulls and how we might allow ourselves to share tastes with them, or to, you know, actually give them a taste of our food, relies on these few things here. Firstly, I thought, well, it's about partly, as these people are doing here, it's about recognising our sort of person-animalhood. People often talk about animals having personhood, but actually that's sort of the wrong way around for me. I think, you know, people need to think about their animalhood more and engage with the fact that, well, we're all the same thing, just in various different forms, we're all living things. And this tied into something that I read by Redmayne, where he was talking about grieving for pets, actually. And he was talking about pets being a sort of a liminal type of animal between other animals, wild ones that we don't have relationships with, and people. They were sort of like werewolves, he likened them to, because, you know, they could be human and animal. I wasn't really convinced by the whole werewolf thing, except that it sounds quite cool. But it made me think, well, you know, maybe we're the ones that need to be werewolves, not the animals. We're the ones that need to change a little bit into animals in order to make this work. I haven't explored that any further. It might require gene modification, I suppose, but I put it out there as a possibility. And the other thing that occurred to me was this idea of the eachness of gulls, which is a phrase used in a paper written about egrets, where a situation in America where a whole load of egrets were injured, and they were flooding into people's gardens and dying in their swimming pools, and people were very much divided into people like, oh God, there's dead egrets everywhere, it's disgusting, they're in my swimming pool, for God's sake. And the people that were out there trying to help every single one. And the people that were out there trying to help every single one built this very strong relationship with the animals. They had never took notice of them before, but they could see each individual animal experiencing suffering and having, you know, an individual sense of self. And that very much connected them to the species as a whole, but also the animals as individual. So I thought, well, here's something else where we need to foster this idea of eachness and perhaps learn from those feeders, because they must have some sort of sense of eachness going on in their relationship with those gulls, as far as I could tell. And that sort of really relates to these direct encounters as a way of sort of breaching the gap between the them and us, the otherness of the gulls, the way that we distance them and put them sort of over there. Now, I put here in chance their animabilities, because something that is talked about, there's a few papers about pigeons and how come they're pests and nuisances, and the idea of them being up in the air and having different mobilities to us was making them something different, something potentially annoying, scary, intimidating, and so on. This extrapolates obviously to gulls because they're also up there and they're on the water. Wherever you go, you can't avoid them. Sorry. But it made me think, well, what we need to do actually is make that a good thing. We need to understand and research ways to be enchanted by the fact that they can do so many things we can't do. If you watch the One in Nature documentary, it probably would be enchanting. We watch whales and dolphins and sharks and think they're awesome. And we need to perhaps promote this with the more common things like pigeons and gulls, really, to turn around our attitudes towards those. I've said leverage agonism just because really I like the words. And what I meant was, David Cameron, you know, where there's a situation where there's tension between different sorts of people, we can manipulate that to encourage the gulls to get caught up in this and somehow their opinion to be raised within the public because of perhaps who they're associated with. I don't believe gulls have the vote yet, nor perhaps would they want to, but you know, but we do have ways of doing that. I'll just quickly go through the last ones there, the 9-to-5 grafting gull. This came about because one of my interviewees said to me, well, it's like a 9-to-5 to the gulls in the park. They turn up at 9, feed all day, and then they go home. It's just, they're just like me. They work for a living. And I thought, well, we need to promote this a bit more then, because we like animals that work hard, like bees and ants, don't we? So why not gulls? If we actually understood they're working, maybe it would be better for the gulls. And finally, romancing the gull. I don't know what I was thinking there, apart from the fact that these seagulls of Brighton were somehow magical, and the way that I was seeing into this window of what was clearly fabricated stories about gulls, somehow that was a really lovely thing, and you know, I showing that to other people, they found themselves very much engaged by it as well. So I thought, this is what we need more of, a little bit of a sort of PR campaign that brings in the emotions and ties people emotionally to form bonds and connections to gulls. I'll finish there, thank you very much. But as I say, this is sort of an ongoing interest of mine, so I'd really appreciate any thoughts you might have on other things we can do to learn to share our taste with gulls and also to learn to tolerate and be more positive about them. Thank you.